Sloppy Spoilers with your host, Spoilers. DT2. Spoilers. Spoilers.
Spoilers. Spoilers. Welcome to episode 2. We're going to be talking about Titans season 2, episode 4. And today I have my guest host, David Nemesis Howard. What's up, Dave?
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Greetings from California. So glad to be here with all of you and to finally be live with Dave Taylor, who I have known for a while online, and it's great to talk to you.
Thanks so much, man. Yeah, so let's jump right on in. So Titans Season 2, Episode 4. Now, what I discovered was, no pun intended, Dr. Light continues to get his glow up. He seems to be really a serious foe, but also his powers are as much electrical as they are light-based. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. He's a little bit surprising on how good of a character and a villain he is so far. I think it's been interesting.
Absolutely. It's been absolutely interesting, and he seems to give him a tough time.
Yeah.
Now, the episode opens with Deathstroke basically being a beast. He's basically being the beast we know him from the comics. He's taking people out left and right with kill shots, and they're dying all over the place, and he is, once again, one of the scariest villains I think DC has ever produced.
I absolutely have to agree with you, and I have to say that the name escapes me for a moment, but the actor that they chose to play Deathstroke, his look and his tone in these, especially these last two episodes as Deathstroke, has been just perfect. And that opening montage where he's going through and just taking people out was absolutely insane. He's just so good and such an air of menace. You know, that you actually believe that he could take on all the Titans and they would be in some serious trouble. So
that's right. It's Isai Morales.
Yep, yep. And man. I've seen him in other things. Wasn't he it's just escaping my mind, but I've seen him in other movies and shows, and he's just, as he's aged and he got those gray streaks in his beard and his hair, he just perfectly blended in into Deathstroke. It was just really, really great. I love it.
Perfect, man. It feels like spot on casting, but also, because you hear me talk about it on Twitter all the time, he looks like he walked right out of the pages of the book.
Yep.
And I got no complaints about Deathstroke. I don't understand how they could possibly do him better. I think he's 100% spot on.
And his kids, both Jericho and Rose, they look great. I mean, they look like they could actually be related to him, and they look, you know, they have the right comic look for those two characters as well. So really, really good.
So I just think it's another example of how sticking to the source material. I mean, obviously, every medium is a different translation, but when you try to stick as close as possible, you get great results. Like you said, they look like they could be his kids. They make me believe they're Rose and Jericho. And, you know, so, you know, I talk about it all the time. I don't understand these people that keep tweaking the wrong things.
Definitely, you know, and, I think there are times when you could take a chance and go a different direction. But, you know, you really need to be sure what you're doing. And I think you need to make up for stepping away from the source material by whoever you're bringing in or whatever you're doing, add something that makes up for whatever you took away, you know? So one of the great examples I always used to fall back on as far as source material was when Denzel Washington played the prince in one of those Shakespeare movies. You know, the prince, in it was set in Italy in the Renaissance. So traditionally that would have been a role, you know, for a white Northern European. But Denzel Washington coming into that role, he was so good in that movie that it didn't matter that you changed the race of this Italian nobleman in the Shakespeare play from, you know, white to African-American, because he was so good in it anyway, you didn't even care. But you know, so you need to be able to do something like that if you're going to tweak or add something to the character or something like that. That's my personal opinion, anyway.
No, I agree completely. Obviously, the most famous example, even though it's not really a race bend in the traditional sense, is Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury, because Ultimate Fury was modeled after him.
Definitely, definitely.
So seeing him come to life on the screen was what we'd seen in the books, but obviously Ultimate Fury was different from original or 616 Fury. But that's another example of how what you just said, that when you come with some gravitas, or you come with some edge, or you come with something that makes the character so much fun to look at, then it's a lot easier to get past if there's been any type of swapping or bending going on.
Right. It's interesting that you bring up that Nick Fury, because I remember it wasn't controversial, but it was definitely, I think they modeled the very first version of that Nick Fury on, my brain is just, the physical model, the way they drew it not as Nick Fury at first, or as Samuel L. Jackson, or someone else. But it's what I was going to say was, as interesting is that, as I took off in the comics and then Sam Jackson has played that character in the movies, there are a lot of people nowadays who don't have never seen Nick Fury as the classic, you know, white guy with the white, you know, with the green temples and the black hair and that, the classic Nick Fury from the 60s. People aren't familiar with that character. Now for them, Nick Fury has always been Sam Jackson and that whole story. And I think they filled it in well as well, you know, in the Ultimates. You know, I'm digressing a little bit, but I liked how they filled in the backstory about how Nick Fury had been a failed super soldier and, you know, all of those other things. So they did some good backfill on the backstory to give him some legitimacy from the comic book, from the point of that point of view. So it was really good.
Plus, you also bring up a good point. The thing that you said was the key, and that is that he can be adapted to modern times. He's a good transition into the Avengers initiative we see in the movies, and the Winter Soldier in particular. And original classic Nick Fury, like original Captain America, is more of a product of his time.
Definitely.
But we have more fun with Cap doing the fish out of water stories. Okay, so in Back to Titan Seasons 2, Episode 4, 5 years ago, all this stuff is going on. And I have to tell you, I was really surprised by this representation of Garth. Because first of all, I miss the Garth fro. He's always had that black curly hair.
Yeah.
Kind of associated that look with him. But this guy felt like he was some combination of Arthur and like some guy that would be on like Fear the Walking Dead or something.
I thought this was like Thor's younger brother. That's what I got out of it. It was like, man, this guy belongs in Asgard with like hanging out with, you know, Thor from the first Thor movie in the MCU or something. You know, he just had that vibe, that dude bro vibe, you know.
That's absolutely right. That's really good. He looks like he's like a junior Hemsworth. That's really right.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, I don't know. It was just really, I don't know, just kind of off-putting to me, not only because I didn't expect Garth to look that way, but because, again, the kind of swagger he had felt more like Momoa's Arthur at best.
Yeah.
But it just, I don't know, it just felt a little mischaracterized to me. So one of the main conflicts in this episode is that Donna is struggling. And Donna's struggling with two things. She's struggling with returning to Themyscira, but she makes it seem like it's the same kind of situation with Corey, that she doesn't have a choice, which doesn't sound a lot like the Amazons to me, because they seem to be all about choice.
Right.
And she's struggling with her feelings for Garth. But I will say, they introduced it and went through it so fast, it didn't give me a lot of time. I would believe faster that Donna was in love with Grayson than I would she's in love with Garth, because we meet him and all this stuff is going on in one episode, you know?
Hmm. Yeah, I agree with you on that. You know, I don't want to spoil the show for what we're going to talk about, you know, as we go through the show, what happens later. But Garth kind of comes in fully, you know, fleshed out and just plop right in our laps. And I don't need a ton of backstory. I kind of, to be honest with you, I kind of appreciate that we're getting, they allude to a lot of things. You know, we're led to believe that there was such a thing as the Teen Titans at one point, mm-hmm. when all these characters were, you know, younger, you know, 12, 13, 14 years old, and they've grown up together. And, you know, they're just talking about these things matter-of-factly. And in fact, in other series, they've talked about other characters who are not around at the moment, but I think they've mentioned Wally West. They've mentioned
Roy Harper, because he called on last week.
right. They mentioned that as well. So, you know, they're mentioning those characters, but I agree with you. You know, Garth, he just doesn't seem to be Donna's type. And also, he acts, I'm not going to say out of character, but he's got such a duality to him as far as, you know, he's this cocksure, braggadocious, you know, Hemsworth-like guy, and his public face, or when he's trying to, you know, be the superhero, but then he's pining away and unsure and not, you know, doesn't know how to talk to Donna, even though they've known each other for, what, you know, 8-9 years, it's, you know, they make it sound like. So it's very, I don't know, it just didn't seem to play right. You know, it seemed like if they'd been friends and teammates for that long, they might have a relationship where it's harder for him to do something like that just because they've known each other for so long. Maybe they think of each other like brother, almost brother or sister, you know, something like that. But this was a really kind of a strange situation. It was a little awkward.
Yeah, that's right. If it's going to be like a Ron and a Hermione thing, then you need to go all the way with that.
Right.
But it just seemed like that way, like on Donna's end. Mm-hmm. And I agree that Garth comes across like he's like almost kind of desperate.
Right.
And I'm like, that is not a good look, man. That's not a good look on anybody. But I'm like, you know, I didn't feel like he was the right character for this story. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and not only that, there's the one part where they talk about an incident that the two of them had where they were in some northern, I think it was an ocean or something, and she was looking for a clownfish, mm-hmm. and he brought a clownfish all the way from the tropics, and, you know, and so they had argued about, you know, but it was like this supposed to be show how he wanted her attention, and so he brought this clownfish with his powers all the way to the tropics for her. And I'll be honest, you know, I'm an animal lover, so my first thought was, oh my God, the poor clownfish, you know, it's in the cold water, you know. And then my second thought was like, you know, what, this is a little weird, you know, it's a little odd, you know, that Donna Troy, who's obviously an intelligent woman, you know, thought that she had found the clownfish, and then he just kept it to himself that he had brought the clownfish up there. You'd think he would have been, the way he was, he'd brag about it or something. And then it would have made more sense, like, if he had bragged that, you know, hey, look, I brought a clownfish for you. And then Donna gets upset, you know, about him doing something like that to a fish or something. You know, that would seem to make more sense to me. But it was a little odd.
And then they reference Finding Nemo, which can only be there's no other way to take that except there is cute.
Uh-huh.
And it felt like to me, again, like a little more on the immature side of what I'm used to seeing Donna. But Donna was kind of acting like, when you look back at her action, she was kind of acting like she was just kind of finding out what boys were.
Right.
You know, like she was closer to 13 than 19, or however old she's supposed to be. I don't know how old she's supposed to be now. But she was acting like, you know, what are these things called boys? I'm not quite sure how they work. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was a new concept to her.
And yeah, I got that feeling as well. I almost felt like the whole Themyscira thing, and going back, you know, they never really explained what this whole year in the world was that she was having, you know, why she was out in the world for a year. But it almost felt like she was running back to the convent or something, you know.
Yeah.
It's really did. It was like, I got to go back to Themyscira and be a nun now because I'm confused or something. It was,
well, I promised them nunnery, so I got to have my fun out here with you, but now that's all over.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, to top it all off, she goes and, I mean, she does Garth dirty by, you know, instead of saying goodbye to him, she sleeps with him, and then she's going to bail on him. So I was like, wow, you know, this doesn't seem like Donna. But
well, that's like the ultimate Dear John, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And but the other thing, while we're talking about like tone and conflicting tones, Donna sold it like there would be some really heavy consequences if she didn't go.
Right.
And then when she makes her, you know, finds her contact, which I really liked that character. I really liked the idea that there was an Amazon kind of hidden in plain sight and that she was like a permanent contact for people that were coming and going from Themyscira discreetly. I really liked that. I wanted them to do more with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it again, it seemed like Donna sold it like it was some type of sacred promise, like this is what the Amazons do and I can't violate this thing.
Right.
That's the same way, you know, her connection, that, you know, the mother of nuns handled her. And then it's like, well, I'm having an emotional moment, so I guess not. And he's just like, okay, well, you want me to take the plane back or what? And I'm like, wait. I'm just saying all episode, like, you know, I'm trying to think, okay, that's where it is. I knew I was thinking about something like Black Panther. It was like, you know, you imagine this ritual back on Themyscira and all the Amazons are standing around and doing a bullets and braces thing, or they're singing a song, or they have something very specific to them. And if you don't get the mark or pass the test, or if you don't show up, you're blackballed, you're ostracized, you're shunned. So that's the way she sold it.
Right.
And then just kind of casually, well, I started crying and I think I'm really going to miss my boyfriend. Oh, my God. So well, you know, send the plane back. We all right. We good. I'm like, really, Donna, really?
And it was also a little odd for me. And the whole Donna character, it was just, it's Garth was like a fish, you know, excuse the pun, but was like a fish out of water. I think because it was just like he was here and he had not been in any other episodes and suddenly Garth is there and he'd been mentioned once or twice and I think in a couple of other episodes, but we'd never seen him. But the other odd thing was, you know, the only other time we've seen Donna and Dick interact, you know, in season one and then even here in season two, they were either equals. You know, here in season two, I think they're much more equals. But in season one, you know, Donna always looked at Dick as like her younger brother almost.
Right.
And in this episode, Dick was definitely the adult in the room. You know, I like that he was showing leadership qualities leading this version of the Titans. But Donna was so, you know, out of control one way or the other on her emotions, everything else, that, you know, Dick was the one picking up her slack a lot of the time. And then when she left without telling Garth, you know, what was happening, and after she had slept with him, it was Dick that ended up having to break the news to Garth, which was like, you know, wow, you know. And you could tell he was angry about that. So, I mean, I kind of appreciated seeing Dick in that role, but it just doesn't seem like the Donna that we've seen prior to this in the series, so...
Well, I can account for that in the modern day. Maybe she was growing into that person, but in the modern day version of them, remember that she was happy out in the world living her life.
Right.
And when Dick brings her back to Titan's Tower, I think all those memories come flooding back.
Mm-hmm.
And she probably feels vulnerable and scared and confused and still angry.
Right.
Over what happened, because she was much more chill when she was out there just enjoying her life, leaving Wonder Girl behind her. So I think she has a level of post-traumatic stress, and in this episode we find out why, so let's get into that.
Okay.
Which I completely disagree with the way this was handled. I'm just sitting there looking at the picture. I'm just kind of blinking. You know how you have to blink for a few minutes after something happened?
Yeah.
So I'm saying to myself, so what happens in the episode is that for no discernible reason or explanation, out of nowhere, Garth gets shot by Deathstroke. And... as soon as it happened, I'm shaking my head. I'm like, no. And here's why. First thing why is because both of them have super speed. You can even see them reacting as the bullet is coming.
Right.
Second of all, Donna is trained to stop bullets with her bracelets.
That means
you have to be fast enough to see them and stop them. Third of all, everybody knows that Aquaman is not bulletproof, but he's tougher than one shot. You couldn't take him. You couldn't take down an Atlantean with just one shot.
Right.
So, you know, if any of that was present, I would have expected more of a fight, even if he does end up dying.
Mm-hmm.
But the way they did it, just a bullet out of nowhere, and they both react fast enough to avoid it or block it, and they just stand there and let it happen. So, you know, was it a specialty bullet? Was it like an Atlantean bullet? You know, I don't know.
I couldn't agree with you more. I was thinking to myself, I had so many questions about this scene. Number one, absolutely agree with you on as far as Wonder Girl has super speed and she can knows how to block bullets with her bracelets. That's one. Before I even thought that, though, I was like, went back to what you were talking about. So an Atlantean is much tougher than that. Plus, Garth was in his suit, which should have some armor in it, you know? So I was like, well, what is this bullet the Deathstroke used? Was this like a special bullet or what was going on here? But the biggest question I had about that scene is, to me, it's not clear who the target was. I don't know, was Deathstroke trying to kill Wonder Girl? Was Deathstroke trying to kill Garth? Or was Deathstroke trying to kill the Atlantean ambassador, or the
Themyscira.
Themyscira ambassador.
Yeah.
Who was he trying to kill there? You know, because Garth stepped in front of Wonder Girl to stop the bullet or protect her. I don't know, because, you know, the only clue we have is that Deathstroke's, you know, I guess business manager or whatever you are, handler or what you want to call him,
mm-hmm.
gave him the dossier and said, you know, this one's a little different. And so we know someone hired, you know, I was going through all sorts of different scenarios, and I was talking to Sean Warner on a different podcast about this. And I was saying, you know, I was kind of wondering in the back of my mind, did the Themyscira ambassador hire Deathstroke to kill Garth so that Donna would go back? To go, you know, I was like, that was just like spitball around my mind. I have no reason, you know, in the series to think that that's what's going on. But it's like, I was very confused on why he was hired to kill somebody there and who it was that he was hired to kill. I have no clue. And I hope they clear that up at some point down the line, because I'm very confused by that.
Well, nothing we know about Amazons would allow them to stand there and let somebody else take a bullet for them.
Right.
That is just completely out of character for everything Amazon we've ever seen. On the page, on the screen, that's not how they would react to that kind of situation. And you're right, that's a very good point that, you know, exactly who was he trying to hit and why? Because, again, with the sudden introduction and then elimination of Garth, we don't have enough time to build emotional stakes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I mean. I think he was the wrong character. The way I would have written it was I would have made maybe Dick and Donna had a fling, and maybe they both realized, you know, I shouldn't cheat on Dawn, or this isn't going to work, or we work better as friends, or I love you too much to go through this or whatever. And then Dick gets hurt and it's Donna's fault. And then they forever promise to be friends and keep between them what happened. All of that makes more sense to me.
Definitely. I like that a lot, you know. Or if you were going to use Garth, you know, it's never a good look when you introduce a character who was supposed to have backstory with another character, introduce them, put them through some drama, and then kill them all in the same episode. You know, it's like almost impossible to pull that off and actually make it mean something. And I was one of those people that was really excited about Garth being in this season. You know, and maybe he'll be in another episode as another flashback, but at this point it was like, it just felt really like a throwaway. It was kind of too bad. I was hoping that he would be around, you know, and I know that they have limited time and limited budget and limited episodes, but I would like to have seen him at least in another flashback or a series of flashbacks in the episodes preceding this to give us some context on his relationship with the group and with the different characters would have been. Yeah, I mean, that would have been really good. You know, another way they could have gone, it would have been to start something, the beginnings of the Don and Hank relationship, where Dick walks in on Don and Hank, and, you know, and they are flirting or something, and Dick is hurt, and so he goes off to take a walk, and Donna goes after him, and Dick isn't paying attention or whatever.
Right.
And Donna tries to save him from being attacked by Deathstroke or something like that, and fails to get there in time, and Dick gets hurt, you know, and then she blames herself for, you know, him taking a dark turn or whatever would happen from that, you know, and then that is in effect. There's a lot of different ways they could have gone, so.
Right, right, right. No, what you're saying is really, really good, in that we needed to spend some more time with Garth all along.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe this could have had some emotional weight, but it didn't have any. And I honestly think that they kill Garth because they really don't know what to do with him. Mm-hmm. Now, one good thing I did like was that he was able to control water from any source. And I was hoping he was going to have that power, that if they just got him around some water, he could control it and create water funnels, create shapes with it. And I'm like, okay, good. Because if all they have him do is to breathe on the water, talk to fish thing, then he's going to be extra useless. That's why they used to tease, you know, about Aquaman, that that's all he could do.
Right.
So the controlling water thing was great. But I honestly think he's dead because they didn't know what to do with him, because there wasn't really a good in-story reason. They could have struggled with their feelings and Donna not gone back and he'd still be around. So the only thing, you know, they were just trying to give Donna a sad, I think, maybe give her her edge, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But the only other thing I can think of is maybe they're going to bring Calder in later, or maybe they're going to bring in, oh man, I forgot her name, his girlfriend from
Tula.
Yeah. I think maybe they're going to introduce maybe one of the younger versions of the Atlanteans, since they killed Garth.
Mm-hmm.
That's entirely possible. That's the only thing I could think of to try to get something positive out of it.
Yeah, that would be interesting. You know, it's funny you're saying about Garth and his powers and everything, because it suddenly occurred to me the other character that he reminded me so much, and I think why this version of Garth was so just dude bro, and like when he died you're like, yeah, okay, he's dead. You know, and he reminded me of the character, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but the similar character from The Boys, the series that was just on Amazon, and the comic graphic novel series, the and he's like an Aquaman type character, but he's the same kind of guy, you know. He's like exactly the same type of character, and he's kind of a sleazeball, and he's not good with women, and then he like sexually he had like a not a sexual assault, but he did something sexually inappropriate with another superhero. But it was just like, it was the same kind of guy, the swagger, this bravado, but he wasn't bad around women and everything. It was just like, it's like, it was almost like they had watched a version of the, you know, The Boys television series, and then wrote Garth, you know, in this way. So it just suddenly occurred to me. I was like, okay, that's different.
Well, you know, just like Anakin and Padme, which is the quintessential example of us thinking they have to be in love because the plot says they are.
Right.
There's no on-screen reason. There's no on-screen reason for you to feel the way you feel, because all we see is a guy coming on to you and coming on to you a little bit strong.
Right.
We don't see any reason that you have being who you are or where you're from, or we don't see any characteristics in him that would make you feel that way. Again, that works better with Grayson. That works better with Dawn and Hank. Maybe she was cheating on him and they were sneaking off and Hank got hurt and Dawn had to tell Dick why.
Right.
There's just so many other ways they could have spread that out. And now the other thing that really, really bothered me, or one of the other things that really bothered me, is when they go up against Dr. Light, they're beating the crap out of the regular thugs, which is always awesome.
Right.
It seems like even Dawn is better at hand-to-hand, better at melee fighting than Hank, which is a little role reversal. But eventually Dr. Light kicks Grayson and Donna's butt so hard, they're cowering behind some crates.
Yeah.
I said, nah, hold on just a blue-black minute. We don't have any batarangs. we don't have the magic lasso. You can't throw anything from an angle. And he's, and I'm like, oh man, I was cringing watching Wonder Girl and Robin cowering behind some crates in front of Dr. Light. I was like, really?
Yeah. And I think I talked to you online about this a little bit, but I agree. I think that one of the problems they're having with this show, and don't get me wrong, I'm enjoying the show quite a bit.
Me too. But
one of the problems they're having is that is a problem that you would have with any superhero movie or superhero TV show, is that you've got heroes with such vastly different power levels, but you want all of the actors to be in on the dialogue and the action, and you don't want to favor one over the other necessarily, and your good actors may not necessarily be in the most powerful character roles. Mm-hmm. You know, so they want to get everybody involved and they want to show people doing different things, when in reality Donna Troy should probably have picked up a car and just smashed Dr. Light with it.
So, I mean, come on now.
Yeah.
We'll use that incredible lasso, but I'm saying, you know, I hear what you're saying, but you know, the thing that jumps in my head is always Firefly.
Right.
When you have someone who has a cast of 9 and they all have different everything, different backgrounds, different motivations, different strengths and weaknesses, but somehow Joss Whedon really made that work, and he made us believe in each one of them of what they could do. Like, you know, Inara, you know, didn't have hand to hand. I mean, she has a bow and arrow and Serenity, but that wasn't her thing. And Jane is just kind of, you know, pure muscle, you know, Captain Jockstrap or whatever. But the way they approach things, and then, you know, River's a sleeper agent, but I'm saying we believed each one of them at their power levels, and they could have done something like that to show that Dr. Light was powerful or that he was faster. But what I thought they were going to do, the smarter play is to endanger some civilians and split the hero's attention. Mm. Or I thought he was going to bring some buildings down around Donna, so she's going to have to take her speed and strength and stop the collapse, which would have made more sense. But cowering behind the crates and Robin doesn't throw a batarang or anything, really? Yep, no. And no. And how about no?
Well, you know, Dr. Light actually did that in the one, I think it was earlier in this episode, where they were having a fight and Dr. Light was getting, you know, his butt kicked by Robin and I think it was Hawk and Dove. Mm-hmm. And he threatened a bus full of civilians.
Right.
And so Dick hesitated because he didn't want the civilians to get hurt, and Dr. Light got away. So it was like, that felt like a very good fight. It felt accurate. It felt comic booky, because that's the kind of thing that a comic villain would do, right, to get away when outmatched. So that felt really good. But I agree with you. It was like, the only thing that was missing in that scene was, you know, Dick on a walkie-talkie calling in for the backup, you know. So it was like an old cop show or something, you know. And then, and then Hawk and Dove come in, and it's like, no disrespect to Hawk and Dove, but if Wonder Girl and Dick Grayson can't handle the situation, what are Hawk and Dove supposed to do, you know?
They're red shirts. That's yeah. Just take some hits until we can get close enough to them to take them out.
Yeah. You know, and no disrespect to Hawk and Dove. I mean, they're cool characters, but they're not on the same fighting level as Robin. And in my opinion, and I don't think that's a very out there opinion. And then Wonder Girl is powered up, you know, so it's like.
Now, the other thing that they're doing, this is another one of my pet peeves, because, you know, I have a lot. But Donna is a selective Amazon. So she only remembers she has super speed when the plot needs her to. She has that lasso when the plot needs her to. And she only remembers that lasso makes people tell the truth when the plot needs her to.
Right.
You know, and this selective, you know, remembering of her Amazonian powers, even if she's only half Amazon, that's still, you know, powerful enough and fast enough to do the things she would need to do in these situations.
Right.
That's really bothering me too, because she's one of the most powerful characters given the roster that they've chosen. I think they have Corey's power level right, and also like the idea that they gave her a little, you know, a little weakness in that she needs kind of the Superman thing that she needs direct sunlight. She needs to charge up.
Right.
That if she's in darkness too long, she can kind of feel it. I can buy that, and I can see that as a good counterbalance. Otherwise, she'd just be too powerful, because how could you ever lose if you have the power of the sun all the time?
Right.
So I can buy that. But with Donna, man, it's just very selective. You know, we see her super speed running. I'm like, once you show somebody moving at super speed, what do we yell at the screen? Why don't you do that all the time?
Right, exactly. You know, and that's really my thinking on her all the time, is that, you know, Superboy is supposed to come on to the show eventually, and he's the only one in the team that would be stronger than her, you know, or at the same strength level as her. You know, I would argue that once Raven figures out what's going on with her, she's probably just as powerful as, you know, the most powerful members of the Titans. So she's going to be as powerful as Starfire and Wonder Girl and Superboy, you know, in her own way. But yeah, I was like, I want to see her cut loose. You know, I really would love to see her do. But at the same time, I realized, you know, I think it goes back to what I was saying before, which is, if they let her be Wonder Girl all the time, mm-hmm. I think that she tanks most of what's going on, you know. But, and there's a big but there, if you write things the right way, you can figure out ways for villains, good villains, to overcome that, you know. And I think you could do it with Dr. Light, and you could definitely do it with Deathstroke. Deathstroke has fought plenty of superpowered individuals. He'd find a way to exploit her weaknesses.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly right. I mean, he's already, and that's one of the best things about this characterization, is that he's already getting in their heads.
Mm-hmm.
His whole approach is to get in their heads. And like you said, let's see. I'm sure all of them don't enjoy being Titans. Let's see if they enjoy being back together. I mean, that was so pitch perfect to me. That's exactly how Slade would respond.
Right.
That's also the characterization we saw on the Titans cartoon. Because that Slade, voiced by Ron Perlman, was probably the best Slade I've ever seen.
Plus, you know, I know that you're a fan of Flash and his rogues and everything.
Uh-huh.
One of the ways, you know, you deal with, like, super speed, an example, which Donna would have, and would be such a Slade-Wilson type thing to do, is he's a martial artist. He's going to understand angles and attack patterns and everything. Mm-hmm. Well, super speed doesn't mean that you have super agility or can change directions that quickly. You still got to follow basic physics. I remember watching a movie with this once. I can't remember what it was, but it was somebody did it really well and made it so that super speed could almost be a hindrance to you, because your ability to cut and move, you know, and react to things may be impacted.
Mm-hmm.
And so Slade could use her speed against her by setting her up for running into an attack and stuff like that. There's ways that you could do it that would be well, because even though she may have super speed, like one of the things that Flash has such an advantage is that he also thinks at that super level, you know, so he can think that fast, so he can react quickly and move and everything. So.
Well, see, and I think it also brings out some of the other challenges, some of the other problems that they're having, because the truth of the matter is, not every one of these characters has an arc.
Right.
Still, the most interesting arc to me is watching Grayson turn into Nightwing.
Right.
I thought that was brilliant. We, you know, spent one season with him as Robin, but he's rejecting the Robin role for a bunch of different reasons. I don't always agree with the reasons, but I agree with the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he said it a couple times already. He said, I'm not Robin, but I can't not be Robin, so what am I? So I think that's brilliant. So we actually have somewhere for him to go. I don't and Raven, the whole thing is, I feel like they're just kind of repeating her arc, because her arc has always been, I got to deal with my dark side. Hey, did you know I have a dark side? Yeah, I got to deal with my dark side. So, you know, that's kind of always been her thing, but I mean, you know, what else are you going to do with Raven, honestly?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you. I think there are other things that they could eventually bring in with Raven, but it would involve doing some more mature stuff with that actress, and I think she's a little young for it yet, you know, do some relationship things and how that could affect, you know, an actual romantic relationship, preferably, I would think, with Garth.
Mm-hmm.
Or not Garth.
Garth.
Gar, yeah, Beast Boy. You know, to widen the discussion out a little bit as a series in general, I think if I really had to say that I'm disappointed about anything, I watched this series a lot of time with my daughter, who's a big Teen Titans fan, and she loves Raven, and she's so excited this year that Raven's got an even more comic book accurate look with the jewel and the purple hair and everything. She loved that.
Oh, yeah.
But I think they're really wasting Beast Boy. They're wasting Gar or Changeling or whatever you want to call him, because I think he should be much more involved. He really is involved in Teen Titans. He gives you that he should be giving you that comic relief when it's needed, but he can also be such a dramatic character, someone who wears his heart on his sleeve. And then just the visuals. You know, I know that there's the money is probably limited, but I mean, we've seen a tiger and then a brief glimpse of a snake, and that's all we've seen from Beast Boy so far. And it's like,
right.
I want to see some other stuff. Give me a gorilla, or give me an elephant, or give me a rhino, or, you know, my daughter wants him to turn into a T-Rex like he does sometimes. I was like, well, that might be a little much, but, you know, give me something. Give me some, you know, give me some comic like that. You know, one of my favorite moments from one of the animated shows is when he's having an argument with Nightwing, and he thinks Nightwing's being an ass, so he turns into a donkey as he walks away. You know, so
right.
It's a little thing, but it's so Gar, and it's so funny, and it shows that relationship, and it helps build those dynamics, which I think they've done a good job on so far. I mean, I do like the dynamics on the team and the way it's working and how it's building, but I think there's more they could do, you know? So that's not me saying I don't like the show, but I think it's a valid critique. So.
Right. Well, see, the thing that most interests me is that they directly connected a Gar to the Doom Patrol, which is right in comics accurate, but this particular Doom Patrol, they are so messed up. They wrote this so well for what if your powers were a curse?
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen anybody do such a deep dive into a bunch of messed up metahumans like Doom Patrol. I mean, it's mind-blowing with how deep they got into everything and how well it's written, how much you feel everything that they're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought Gar out of that version of Doom Patrol. So I'm saying to myself, every member of that family has some very, very deep baggage. So I want to see, you know, how, you know, especially if they stick to this comic origin, what happens when you discover that you can do what you can do? And then, you know, I'm sure they'll do the Wolverine type story where the beast within is always struggling to get out.
Right.
So you got to decide, you know, to keep your humanity in control. And so there's so much there with him to mine, like you said, in so many areas. And then the whole comic relief thing, because he's not quite wisecracking enough.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, you know, I just have to admit, we were spoiled by the cartoon version of Teen Titans.
Definitely.
We were absolutely spoiled.
And of course, I want, you know, I'm greedy. I want Cyborg and Beast Boy on the same screen together, you know. I'll be honest with you. One of my favorite moments from Doom Patrol, and there were tons, I love that series, was when the whole thing with Cyborg and Booyah. So, you know, and then when he asked, I don't say Booyah that often. And then he got, you know, shut down by his own internal computer. So I was like, that's awesome. You know, I love Teen Titans, the TV series or the animated series. Are you talking about?
Yeah.
I enjoyed Teen Titans Go, you know, it's not serious Teen Titans, but it was funny and it was, I enjoyed it. It was good for, you know, what it was. And, so yeah, I enjoyed that. And I'll be honest with you, there's not a – whenever we see Deathstroke on the series and everything, my daughter and I, we're always go into our sleep, you know, so we're doing our thing, you know. We do our thing all the time, go around, and everybody in the house is doing the slow motion slade. So, you know, we know that we've got our nerd bona fide, you know, feed is going on, so
– Well, see, another thing, and I say this on Twitter all the time, and this just amazes me because I don't have a problem with anybody in geekdom and they're jumping on point. The only thing I don't quite understand is why people think that their jumping on point is the only one. Because the truth of the matter is, however many iterations you have of a character, each one of them impacts that character in a different way in their time and their generation.
Absolutely. So
how much people tell me they don't like the Chris Reeve version? Chris Reeve's Superman solidified a lot of what we expect from Superman in our minds. And you can't undo that, whether you like it or not. You can't undo the impact. And the same thing is true with Conroy.
Right.
Once you see Batman the Animated Series, that is Batman. I mean, how could that possibly be any more perfect? And so once you experience that, and then also with the Arkham games are the other thing that I just...
Right.
I mean, every frame, every scene, every tone palette, every color, every sound, I just love those games to my soul. I love them. I love them. And I'm like, you know, once you experience that stuff, man, it's going to have an impact. That's my only point.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And then, you know, as a fan, I would say then you go back, you know, you have your jumping in point or your favorites, and you go back, you look at other versions, and it helps you appreciate what you love. You learn new stuff. You know, like I said, my daughter is a big Teen Titans fan, and she got into Teen Titans from the cartoon series, and then she started reading the new Teen Titans comic books, and she enjoyed that part. And she loved Tara from the cartoon series. So I introduced her then to the Jews Contract movie, and she liked that. And so recently when I was at WonderCon, I couldn't believe I picked this up. I've talked about this before. The guy was selling first appearance of Tara and the new Teen Titans, and it was in great condition, and he gave it to me for $2. Which,
holy cow.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. So I picked it up for my daughter for she's not here, for Christmas. You know? So, you know, she's going to get exposed to a whole nother era, and I know she's going to love it, you know, and she'll be able to see where all of that came from, you know, and that's the cool part about geekdom, about being a fan, you know.
Well, you know, you touched on something that, you know, a lot of franchises today don't understand, that it's a mistake to diss your long-term fans because we're the ones that pass it on to the next generation.
Definitely.
When you're a kid, man, if mom and dad says, sit down, we're going to watch this movie, and you're naturally going to be asking questions, and you're going to be like, oh, this is this and that is that, and it's going to be the best experience. So you don't want to diss your long-term fan base. That confuses me. But now you brought up Tara. Now, if there's anything I want to see, it's the Judas Contract storyline. I want to see it with some twists. It doesn't have to be like every beat the same, since we kind of already know what's going to happen going in. But I definitely want to see that play out on the screen. I don't, however, want to see Slade and Tara actually have a relationship.
Right.
Especially if she's like Raven's age and he's like, what is he, like 55, 57?
Yeah.
You know, I don't need to see that. We can skip that part.
It's beyond a little creepy.
It's making an adult, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I remember when we watched, even when we watched the recent animated movie version, I watched that with my daughter. The two of us were looking at each other like, yeah, this is a little creepy. You know?
Yeah.
It's a little disturbing. You know, this goes beyond supervillain, you know? It's like, go kill some people. Stop this stuff, you know?
Well, you know, in the comics, they alluded to it and then they kind of showed it, but they also... Part of what they were trying to do was they were trying to show that if Slade had any heart left, that maybe Tara kind of tapped into it, maybe.
Right. There's
one of situations where, you know, kind of like Vader, except Slade is much more, you know, further gone in terms of not being conflicted about who he is. But in his relationship with Tara, we caught maybe a little glimpse that maybe there's a spark of love or whatever, but then he turns it around and, you know, she's just a pawn, and which I thought made it better because she, you know, had a reason to be angry, and, you know, so it was well done. But I'm saying in real life, that, you know, live action, we don't really need to go there. Yeah, no.
Yeah. I mean, I think he can manipulate her in a lot of other ways. You know, you could even write a different way for her to be manipulated that doesn't have to be about that, you know.
Right. All right. Well, we're going to bring this to a close, but the last thing I want to throw out is, what did you think of that appearance of Jericho?
I enjoy it, but, you know, it's good that you brought that up, because this is another thing that at the end where he's in the record store, mm-hmm. and Dick, you know, tracks him down and is obviously using Jericho. Man, I don't know if it was just me, but I got a really sinister vibe off of that. I was like, yeah. Dick, man, what are you doing, man? What are you doing to this kid? So it's like, I didn't get a good feeling off of that. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes in episode 5.
Well, they play James Brown, The Big Payback, as the closing music. Did you catch that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, when they're doing the closing credits, they're playing James Brown's The Big Payback, Revenge.
Oh, no.
And I'm saying to myself, wait. Are you saying that Dick and Donna are going to set Jericho up to pay Slade back for Garth? I mean, it, you know, it's like you said, it felt manipulative in all the worst ways.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't catch it on the music, but that's definitely the vibe I was catching. I was like, oh man, Dick, what are you going to do? You know, it's like, I know you're upset that Garth died, and I know Deathstroke crossed the line, but this is an innocent kid. Where are you going to go? You know, and maybe this is what put Dick in the state of mind he was in when we first got introduced to him at the beginning of Titans. So.
Yeah, but I'm like, you know, just leave the kids out of it, man. You know, you go after Deathstroke, but whatever you're going to do to his kids, you know, that's not his dad. And right. It looked like, you know, Jericho was out there just trying to live his life. And I'm like, So, yeah, man, I'm all for dark and gritty and all that. But when it starts to get so morally gray, what ends up happening almost subconsciously is that you lose your ability to root for the heroes.
Right.
And we can't have Robin or Nightwing and Wonder Girl become so bitter and vengeful that we can't root for them. That's kind of the opposite of who they are anyway.
Well, I will say this, though. This is 5 years ago.
Uh-huh.
If this is, you know, what led to them being the state they were when we were first introduced to them at the beginning of the series, uh-huh. and we get a redemptive arc, you know, so like this redemptive arc that Nightwing is on, that Dick Grayson is on to become Nightwing,
uh-huh.
you know, yeah, we're going to be upset with Dick that he did this, and we're going to be even more upset about, you know, where he was in Detroit and why he was there and why he felt he needed to leave Batman because he felt that Batman had driven him into this. Right. What if we get a true redemption arc, you know, but like with all that said, man, I don't want to see anything really bad happen to Jericho. So writers, please don't have done that. So,
well, what we don't want is the Batman versus Superman thing where they're both so dark, you can't tell them apart.
Right.
The thing that's always made Batman and Superman the world's finest, they said it in Kingdom Come. When you strip away everything from Batman and Superman, you're left with two men that don't want to see anybody else die. Mm-hmm. But the way they go about it has always been so markedly different. And that's what makes them work well together. But when you make Superman just as angry, just as dark, just as vengeful, just as whatever, just as, you know, war obsessed as Batman, then it loses that distinction. And so I don't want to see Grayson or Donna go down that path where they're just so crazed with vengeance. Until, you know, there's no lightness or we don't recognize them. I just, no.
Right. Yeah, those are good points. And you always need that balance. You know, I think that was always been the best thing about Batman, Superman. Those are some of my favorite comics, like World's Finest or something like that.
Yes.
Where they team up. Because you always have this dark light juxtaposition between the two of them. And the way they play off each other. I always like when they write, you know, they'll have one side of the one page is from the point of view of Superman. The other page is from the point of view of Batman and the different, and they'll contrast the different ways they think and stuff. I love when they do that in the comics. So.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I want to thank my guest, David Nemesis Howard, for being on this podcast. We are both really loving this series, both really loving Titans, just want to see them kind of maximize the potential. But I'm excited about where Titans is going and can't wait to get on the next episode. So thanks so much for joining me, Dave. Really appreciate it.
No problem. I'm glad to be here and glad to talk to all you out there.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, guys, we will see you next time for another episode of Sloppy Spoilers.